Welcome back. I'm Graham Thornton.
And this is Marty Pred.
And this is the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast, where we share our unfiltered, grown-up take on what's happening in the world of HR technology and recruitment marketing today. Each week, we share topics and articles that have made us think and offer our insight into where your recruitment marketing efforts should be focused. If there's anything that's on your mind, or if you're interested in joining us on the show, head on over to changestate.io. And without further ado, we're on to the show. All right, Marty, we're back. Episode 24 of the Changing State of Talent Acquisition podcast. 24.
Hey, buddy. It's just you and me again. I know people have missed the solo shows.
And what's a duo solo show? Is it called a solo show if there's two of us?
No, definitely not. Solo means one.
Yeah, that's what I thought. What's a duet? Or is this a duet? So this is it.
All right, let's move on. We're off to a great start.
It's a duet. All right.
Two geniuses here. Yeah. It's a duet. This is why people tune in. Yeah.
That's awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, we've had a guest for the last 9 episodes, I think, 9 or 10. So, and we've got a few great guests coming up around the holidays. Some real good practitioners, you know, people who work for some big companies, maybe a big company out in Seattle, you know, for one. They might distribute a lot of packages around the holidays. So excited about that. But today it's just the two of us. So I want to talk about, let's get back into the world of employer branding today. Marty, what do you think? Does that work for you?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, here's the impetus. So I'm going to pat you on the back, I guess, you know, virtually, Marty. So got nominated for the 2020 Recruiting Brief MVP Article Awards. So, you know, this is, you know, the best content from industry thought leaders. And, you know, these are called the kind of the most valuable posts from judges, readers, and awards committee talking about a few different categories. And you're nominated in the category of employer branding, Marty. So all the times I've yelled at you to pump out a blog post, we've got you, you know, one of the thought leaders. So,
yeah, finally, all the hard work paid off. Thank you. Thank you. I have no idea how they went about selecting the finalists, but I'll take it. I'll take it. We'll just say, let's call it an accomplishment. This was for the article I wrote. I guess this was when April 16th is when we posted on our blog called Employer Branding During Crisis, Our Early Thoughts About the Road Ahead. Maybe an interesting starting point is just to refresh our memories of what we were thinking back in April, and maybe how our impressions of space have changed since we've all been living in COVID times for, you know, the whole year now. It's hard to believe it's almost the end of it. You know, I think the largest point I was trying to make in that piece was that, you know, everyone was quite frankly panicked at that time, not just about COVID, but also about what it meant for employers. People were laying off or furloughing, you know, millions of workers at that time. Nobody quite knew what the road ahead looked like, when things might return back to normal. And people were super concerned about how to respond to COVID in the workplace, both in terms of making these decisions about laying off workers and also some of the tactical stuff about, you know, how are we keeping our workplaces safe and sanitary and clean and, you know, healthy environments for our employees. I think my point in that article was that, the quote that we kind of teased at the very beginning with was, adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. So we had a lot of people at that time making these bold claims about, you know, how the COVID pandemic and how employers responded to it is going to be defining of their brands for years, if not decades. And I was gently pushing back at that at the time, saying, like, look, this situation is just generally a difficult situation. Almost the only guarantee is that everyone's going to make some mistakes along the way. I think as long as you're making good faith efforts and then explain where you kind of where you made mistakes and what you're going to do differently, that it's probably not going to be such a huge pivotal moment for brands. And honestly, I kind of feel vindicated. I don't know what your thoughts are, but like looking back, I think back in March, there were some high profile cases that I can't even remember now of, you know, certain executive teams keeping their pay at the astronomical levels they were, and meanwhile laying off, you know, some of their frontline workers, and other examples on the positive side as well. You know, here we are in November. Do we have a clear list of the brands that really just killed it in terms of their response to the pandemic? Or on the other side, do we have a list of like the villains, the people who really dropped the ball and, you know, supposedly it's going to influence their brand for decades? I would have trouble coming up with that list, honestly. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it was companies like Bird, right? I think that that scooter one where, you know, the story that I remember is, you know, they had like a third party, I think, dial in and lead people off on a Zoom. And, you know, there are a lot of examples like that. Look, like, I think the reality is it was when March, I think, 12th or 13th, I think it was Friday the 13th, actually. I remember because I had my haircut scheduled for the next week and still going. So, yeah, you know, in early March, it was, boy, everything just shut down. And then March was a whole month of pause and a lot of contingency planning without action. And then, you know, like April is when we started seeing, you know, layoffs. And I think, I think it all boils down to, you know, communication and, you know, there are a lot of breakdowns in communication for how some of these, you know, layoff news was delivered, you know, helping employees understand, you know, what protections companies were taking when it comes to COVID. So I come back to, you know, communication as a pretty powerful, you know, opportunity, not just in the employer brand space, but, you know, just in general. I think communication is, you know, we talk about that a lot just between you and I. So,
yeah, I think so. I mean, just that's kind of what I was getting at. Just, you know, mistakes are going to happen. Let's be honest about it. Let's be honest that we don't actually have the answers and we're trying to figure this out. I think that goes a long way. I think that's what you've seen. I just don't think that a lot of employer brands or brands in general have been made or broken by this pandemic. Certainly some businesses have been broken just because of the economics, but in terms of how brands have responded to the crisis, it's hard for me to see that this has had a huge lasting impact in people's minds. Now, maybe that's a controversial point, but like I just don't see it. And especially if you look at the broader context here is, you know, back in April, I don't know how many people had died in the U.S. from COVID on April 16th when this was published, but I got to imagine it was below 10,000. And now we're at a place where, you know, 250,000 people in the United States have died from COVID. You know, unfortunately, I think we've all become a little bit numb to it. And not to get political, but I think that I actually don't think this is political at all, but it's a sign of the times that people might think it is political is, you know, the government has not done a great job of implementing robust plans for protecting us. So I think the idea that employees would be looking to their employers to provide clear recommendations and protocols for protecting them from COVID falls a little flat when you consider the fact that the biggest institution of all, our federal government, has really dropped the ball on that. And by most measures, you know, about 50% of the voting population doesn't seem to really care. So it's another reason why I think that, you know, this prediction that COVID would have such a big impact on brands is kind of falling flat a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think what we're seeing is, well, we do our, you know, talent insight work. Like, we go ask employees what they're looking for. I think what's, you know, probably not surprising, maybe just a, you know, tangential connection point there is, you know, what employees are looking for now is more guidance or help from their employers on, you know, creating a you know, what we would call a safe or a sanitary work environment, right? So, you know, like, I think, you know, the responsibility is being put on employers more to talk about, hey, like, what are we doing, you know, to take, you know, COVID seriously, right? And what are the precautions that we're putting in place? And I think, you know, we see that in our studies all the time, right? Like, that's the one thing where, you know, a lot of things have changed in terms of employee expectations. And like, hey, like, they expect that, like, your employer is going to, you know, prioritize health and safety. And I think that's something that, you know, when we were running these surveys a year ago, you know, or 9 months ago or February, that wasn't something that was really top of mind, right? So I think that, you know, like, there are some pieces that move, but, you know, larger employer brand attributes, like, hey, like, maybe haven't moved as much, right? People expect their employers to take care of them. And what that, you know, means might have changed or moved a little bit, you know, since COVID happened. But, you know, I think a lot of those same brand pillars are, you know, are still similar, still there.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think it's really changed the focus. I mean, this is a crisis. This is it's not different from a natural disaster like an earthquake or a tornado or a wildfire, some of which we've actually experienced this year out in the West Coast. And, you know, I think a lot of the richness of EVPs and employer brands in a non-crisis time are kind of diminished in importance at the time of crisis, because those things tend to be very aspirational. They're things like, what's the mission of the company? What's the company culture like? And it's a bit like, you know, you're in the middle of a flood or something. And you ask someone like, what's their passion in life, or, you know, what do they really want for dinner tonight, when you're just trying to survive? Like, those are probably bad analogies, but I think you get my point. Like, a crisis has a way of hyper-focusing us on just the immediate survival needs. And in the employment context, the survival needs are safe and sanitary workplace. So we've seen, you know, certainly in our talent insight studies, and I don't think we actually needed a talent insight study to probably tell us that employees care about that. Is it a big opportunity for differentiating your employer brand? Probably not. You know, people have, I think what we've seen is that people come to expect a baseline level of competency in terms of providing masks, making sure that there's sanitation in place, making sure that the workspaces have been, you know, redesigned to allow for social distancing, some common sense kinds of things like that. But I don't see a lot of opportunity for differentiation there. It just seems to be, the fact is, people expect some reasonable effort. And if you can check those boxes, then I think it's probably not going to do a lot of harm to your brand beyond that.
Yeah, so I've got a question. This is one I haven't really given to you before. So you'll text me later and tell me this is a good one. So, all right, you know, sites like or companies, you know, Facebook, teaching, right? Like, you know, Amazon, almost anyone, right? Like, there's such a big push to remote work, at least temporarily, you know, while COVID sort of plays itself out, right? And you know, mm-hmm. some of these organizations have said, hey, we're not having meetings in person until, you know, July of 2021. I think Facebook said they're not going to do any events until the end of 2021, right? Like, so I think about, you know, employer brand, and like, you know, we see a lot of articles talking about, hey, you got to get beyond, and we feel this way too, you know, the foosball tables of the world, right? And like, hey, like, we got a cool break room. Like, you know, that doesn't exist. So like, how do you think about, or what do you think, you know, companies should be focusing on, if, you know, if anything, when it comes to like, hey, how do you really, you know, build a culture now that so many more of your employees, and especially new hires, right? People that don't get to experience, you know, that company culture in person. Like, well, how do you think about that and the move to remote work as it works to, as it relates to, hey, like, you know, building or maintaining a company's employer brand?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know if I have a great answer. It does remind me of a conversation we had with James Ellis about, you know, how the common wisdom around employer branding was sort of, employer branding is something, some sort of essence of the company that kind of can be found somewhere around the water cooler. And what you're asking is, in a world where we're not congregating around the water cooler anymore, what does that mean for employer branding? Honestly, I actually don't know. I think that, you know, we've obviously seen a huge rise of remote work. We've seen people interacting over Zoom. You know, the question is, can you get a sense of a company culture? I mean, is that same intangible aspect of what the employment experience, does that translate virtually? I don't know. I keep coming back to my dating analogy, which everyone loves, but I think it's hard. You know, I think it's much harder to differentiate and cultivate an employer brand that's clear and compelling at a time where we're all interacting virtually, because so much of it is those conversations that you have in the hallways between meetings, some of those intangible just feelings that are created by how the workspace is designed. And in this case, you're working at home. You created your own workspace. I do think there are probably some opportunities where you can see some of the culture of the company being sent to employees' homes. I think we've all heard of examples of, you know, companies providing money for employees to buy desks and equipment and different technologies to kind of aid them in this new normal, this new remote work normal. But yeah, man, I think it's just a tough one. I think the jury's still out on what employer branding is going to look like. And, you know, what does it mean to have a company culture when we're all dispersed?
Yeah, you know what? I come back to, so, you know, when we study, you know, brand pillars, right, what employees care about, you know, you think about some of the things that you just mentioned, like, hey, your boss walking past your desk and giving you words of encouragement, right? Like, how does that, you know, like, support a pillar like, you know, supportive leadership? And, you know, your company's historically pretty good at that. How do you recreate some of those experiences to, you know, to really lean into like, hey, like, we support our people, like, you know, we provide training opportunities, right? Like, we have, you know, great employee recognition programs, like all of those things, you know, I think historically have been, you know, they're probably easier to replicate when you're in person, right? And, you know, I always think about, like, what does that look like in a virtual environment? And, you know, even some of the other pieces, like, you know, work-life balance, you know, that's, you know, one of the biggest pieces that I think kind of becomes, you know, a little bit difficult to, you know, to hone in on when you're working remote, right? Like, what is it easier to have work-life balance or more difficult when you're working at home? I don't know, right? Like, you know, like at this point, we're going to be in lockdown for the next 4 weeks. Like, you know, if you know, I realize this, you know, it's you and I, but you know, like, you know that I'm not out doing something, right? I'm not, I'm either working or I'm not. Like, so, like, yeah, well, what's the line for work-life balance? And I think that was one of the interesting exercises early on in COVID. Like, hey, if you're shut down and shut inside, you're like, well, yeah, I could be working or I can be, you know, watching TV. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about work-life balance. My girlfriend actually was just telling me how her boss was reminding her that, hey, you got 40 hours of vacation time you got to take before the end of the year. And it's just like, it's a ridiculous activity because it's like, I mean, on the one hand, it's a great problem. Who doesn't want 40 hours off? But what does that even mean during a pandemic when you're kind of housebound? The reality is there's just not that much to do, and work is an important outlet. It's interesting because it almost thinks like it's flipped it on its head. I think work has become an important coping mechanism for a lot of people to get through some of these lonely, bored times in a way that it wasn't in the past. I mean, in the past, when we talked about work-life balance, it was, how do I get out of the office? How am I not spending so much time? How do I work for an employer where maybe my whole identity isn't wrapped up in the office and spending every waking hour and some hours at home working on the company? And now it's almost been flipped on its head to where I think a lot of people are really grateful to have a job. It is probably their primary social outlet, even if it's virtual. And I think people are much more inclined to see, you know, their virtual colleagues as a source of connection in a time when they really need it.
That's interesting. You work as a coping mechanism. So, yeah, you know, like, I mean, as you know, I live at home by myself. Like, the most amount of interaction I have with people is probably on client Zooms and chatting with you, right? So that's interesting. Yeah, like, that this is my primary social outlet outside of, you know, Saturday trail runs or Tuesday runs, like, you know, and that is wildly different than it was, you know, 10 months ago. But well, I don't want to work all the time.
Yeah. Well, didn't you do some sort of happy hour or something with a vendor or something the other day? I mean, one of the big questions we've all had, I think, going into this is like, can we replicate any of these traditional business practices, whether like going out to dinner with a vendor or a client or attending a conference? So far, my instinct says it's really hard to replicate some of those things virtually, you know, which is kind of similar to the conversation we were just having about employer brand. Like, how do you replicate some of that in-person chemistry that, you know, can you do that online? I'm not sure you can.
No, I mean, it was a great session. But again, like, I think a lot of vendors are grasping at straws for like ways that they can, you know, typically you have conferences, right? Typically, look, I worked for a company where it was, you know, if a client or prospect didn't get back to you, then like we would book a flight and then send an email and say, hey, I'm going to have some free time while I'm in New York. Can we get together for coffee? Like, we would fly places just hoping that we would be able to get a meeting. And like, you know, in a way, that's kind of what I think a lot of these vendors are trying to recreate with, you know, some of these virtual happy hours or and pieces, right? Like, hey, like, I can't get a prospect back on the phone. Well, shit, like, let's schedule a virtual happy hour. You know, let's do a virtual wine tasting and try to get back, like, on people's calendars. And you kind of see that in the interaction. It's like, ah, you know, all right, we finished up an hour and a half of you know, tasting. I was like, yeah, I do want to talk to, you know, this vendor again. Like, I'll reach back out. You can tell that vendors are trying to recreate that, you know, that happy hour experience and try to get people to come back out. It's tough, though, because still, I think, you know, to the work-life balance piece, you know, boy, like, is that really what people want to do after spending, you know, 10 hours on a computer? Do you want to go spend another hour and a half on a computer? meeting people for, I don't know, it's weird. It is a little bit tough to recreate, I think.
Well, the answer for me is no, I definitely don't want to do that. But I'm more of an introvert, as we all know.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, let's talk about some of the other articles that are out there. So specifically in the Recruiting Brief MVP Awards. So I know your opinion. So I'll ask this softly, but I'll say, it's like, hey, like of the other, you know, eight articles, are there any of them that, you know, that stood out as like, hey, like, you know, these are, this made me think, right? That's the barometer for a good article in our eyes, right? Like, does it make you think? Does it make you think? So any of the articles out there that you know, said, okay, you know, this is, you know, this has given me pause, right? Giving me something else to dig into.
Yes and no, oh, I suppose.
Tell the truth.
No, I mean, let's start with the positive. I thought Smart Recruiters had a really good one, one of the better articles in the list. They had two on the list, I think, but they wrote one called The Essential Guide to Employer Branding, and we'll link this in the show notes. You know, I think it just lays out some pretty clear ideas for how to lay out a framework for getting your employer brand messages out there. You know, we're often very focused in our business with our clients on setting that baseline. So, you know, one of the common myths that exists in the world of employer branding is that, you know, employer branding is something that you have to actively do. Like, how do we create our brand? And what we always remind clients is that you kind of have a brand regardless of whether you've put any thought into it or not. It's kind of your perception amongst employees and prospects or job candidates, which exists whether or not you've put any time into thinking about it or not. You know, I do think that the employer can be a very active participant in cultivating the future of the brand. So after you've done a talent insight study and you figured out, gee, XYZ are our brand pillars, we're all about supportive leadership, to use the example you gave earlier, well, then you have a clear sort of mission or focus for the company. So if you realize that, hey, we're really good at supportive leadership, maybe we didn't intentionally set out to be doing that, but that's what we're known for and that's what we want to be known for in the future, well, then it's really smart to put practices in place. So all of, not only the content that you're putting out, think about things like job descriptions, employee testimonial videos, even just basic ads that you might sponsor on Facebook or other channels. All of those should hit those brand pillars. In addition to that, you also want to make sure that there are actual frameworks in place in the organization to continue to cultivate those brand pillars. So if we say that we're all about supportive leadership, maybe it was a pleasant surprise when we ran our talent insights study. Well, how can we make sure that we're continuing to cultivate the next generation of supportive leaders within our organization? And I would just encourage you to take a look at that Smart Recruiters article. I think they have some pretty interesting ideas about how to go about doing that. One thing in that article that I thought was a little bit controversial was this piece they had on employee referral programs, which they call a built-in litmus test. And they basically are saying that, you know, if you have a strong employee referral program, that it's a sign of a strong brand, and it's a good barometer for telling whether your brand is strong, how active employees are in referring you or referring friends and you know, family members to work for you as well. We covered this a bit in the last episode, I think, but like I think that's potentially true, but it's very problematic when you start having incentives attached to them. So if you're paying employees for their referrals, it's a bit of a problem, I think, for obvious reasons. Are they referring people to you because they feel so passionately about your brand and they want you to succeed, and they want other people to, you know, discover what you love about working there? Or is really what you love about working there the fact that you can earn $100 by referring people? Which is really not the basis of a strong brand at all.
Yeah, I agree. We've talked about employer referral programs quite a bit, at least, you know, between the two of us. And I think that's, you know, you brought up an interesting point, you know, to me and to one of our clients. And like, you can have an NPS score that is, you know, or a group or segment of employees that are, you know, pretty unhappy. But if you're incentivizing them to refer candidates, and maybe this is high volume recruitment, that doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, you're unhappy, you're not going to refer people. Money's money, right? And you know, we've seen that in some of our clients, some of our studies, that like, yeah, people, like, you may just end up bringing on more unhappy people to an organization, you know, through that program as well. So I agree. I don't think that's the best barometer.
Yeah, I mean, I think this highlights why NPS is just one of the metrics you need to be looking at when you're thinking about what your employer brand's health is. I know we've at least I've talked some shit about NPS scores in the past, and my criticisms remain. I think it really comes to life here when you can imagine an organization who's, say, they've been diligent about running employee satisfaction surveys, and pretty much any employee satisfaction survey that you run is going to have NPS or some kind of metric like that, which, for people who don't know, again, it's the question of how likely are you to recommend us as an employer to friends or other people you've known, acquaintances. And, you know, NPS scores are all over the board, depending on the category. You know, if you're in a high volume setting where you have a lot of turnover, you know, having a NPS score in the single digits or low teens might actually be pretty decent. Whereas if you're in the tech space fighting for engineers, you probably want to see an NPS score that's above 50. Imagine that example where, say, you had an NPS score in the high volume example where, you know, you did it a year ago and you found out that your NPS score among your frontline workers was 17, plus 17, say. And then you suddenly implemented a referral program where you're paying people, say, $100 for every new hire that they refer to the talent acquisition team. And then you run the study again a year later and you find out that, wow, your NPS score went up to 35. It almost doubled. Just throwing out numbers here, but how do you interpret that? I mean, on the one hand, it seems like really good news. To me, it suggests that you implemented a referral program, which you did. Does that mean that people are just totally in love with your brand and twice as much as they were a year ago? Probably not. And that's why we really encourage our clients to think in a more holistic way when you think about some of these brand health metrics. So yes, NPS is important. It's one thing that you definitely need to be keeping track of. You got to be aware of whether or not you have any incentives that are, you know, kind of putting a thumb on the scale, like a referral program that has compensation attached. And then the other thing you want to think about is other metrics too, like employee satisfaction. You know, if you see a big discrepancy between the number of people that say they're very satisfied with their employment and your NPS score, well, that might be a sign that maybe your brand isn't as strong as you thought it was. And then the other thing, that, of course, is tenure. You know, we're very interested in knowing how long people have worked for us already, but probably more importantly, how long they're interested in working for us in the future. And generally, some of the richest insights from our Talent Insights study come from combining, you know, several of these metrics together, because what you're trying to do with Talent Insights is identify who is the type of employee that we want to attract. Like, what is our star employee, the person that really loves what we're offering, they're excited about working here, and they want to stay for a while. And if you're going to get drilling down to that level of detail, you really need to factor in multiple ones of these metrics. So just looking at people who are satisfied may not be enough, because it's certainly possible that you might love working somewhere, but you're planning to leave soon. Maybe you're going to college, maybe you're moving, any number of reasons that you might not be sticking around. And on the other hand, it's possible that you're planning to stay a long time, but you're really not that thrilled with the job. But, you know, due to life situations, you need a paycheck. So really what you're looking for is that I don't want to call it a needle in a haystack, because hopefully it's a bigger population than that, especially if you have a strong employer brand, but you're looking for a combination of these metrics. It was a long rant there, but hopefully people found that useful. Just long point to say that, you know, NPS score, yes, use it, but use it carefully and consider it with other metrics as well.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I think that's a good segue into the, you know, the article on that list that I think is most interesting, right? So, you're talking about building out these personas of people at your organization, right? And we didn't quite close that loop there, but, you know, like, I think that everyone should take a look at that Harvard article, and I think it's called Employer Branding Examples in Times of Change. And I would actually say, you know, maybe skip some of the first examples on the list, because I don't think they're the best. I think they're bearing the better examples kind of down at the bottom, right? So I think 8 and 9 on the list is HubSpot, who, you know, you've heard us talk about before. You've, you know, read a conversation on our blog for sure. And I think HubSpot does a really good job of kind of placing a public-facing lens on what employee engagement looks like at HubSpot, right? So, like, you know, they have their Instagram account, HubSpot Life, and, you know, they've been talking and handing that off to, you know, team members to talk about employee engagement groups, right? Like, what, employee takeovers, like, what's it like working at HubSpot? Like, hey, share your remote work setup. And, like, all of those pieces really kind of lean into or help lean into the connection that, you know, we talk about a lot. And that's like, hey, if you're building out personas or you're building out your messaging, you want what people care about, right, to match what actually happens or exists in your organization. And, you know, in a way, HubSpot is saying, hey, like, here's what it's like in our organization, right? Here's how we support. Here's how we support different diversity initiatives. Here's how we help recreate a comfortable remote work environment, right? Like here's how we support leadership development, right? Or provide opportunities to grow. Like one of our conversations with HubSpot was about how they transfer people from division to division and help upskill folks, right? Like the person that leads their employer branding team was kind of loaned to their engineering department to build up their brand, right, and presence there. And I think HubSpot does a really good job in this example of saying, like, hey, like this is what it's like to work in our organization. It might not be a fit for everyone, and that's okay. And I think that's kind of the crux of this whole self-select in mindset, right? So we've talked about before, like we're not, we are not advocates of, this polarizing, hey, we want to repel talent. No, we want people to self-select into the organization. And I think, this public facing lift under the hood, the HubSpot puts into place is an interesting way to go about that.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if I had gotten actually that far down in the article, full disclosure, but now I'm looking at it. Not surprised to see that HubSpot's doing a great job on employer branding because I think they're one of the stars that lots of people reference, but super cool to see what they're doing on social in particular. I think, one of the things that this brings to mind is, we were talking earlier about human connection and, whether that translate virtually versus what we used to experience in person around the water cooler. And, I think earlier we were saying like, maybe it doesn't, maybe it's really hard to translate. I think that point is well taken, but the other thing that I'm reminded about just seeing some of these examples of, employee takeovers of the Instagram account or, share your remote work setup is that in a different way, I think we're actually getting a much more intimate view of what our fellow employees and leaders are like outside of the workplace, which is really kind of who they really are. It doesn't necessarily have the same professional polish as what you see in an office space. How many times have we been on Zoom calls recently where you see someone's bed in the background or their dogs are jumping around or, I think for all of the challenges of, taking this idea of human connection and applying it virtually, we do see some silver linings in that I think you just get a much better sense of who people are, what their houses look like. I mean, that's a deeper dimension to the employee to employee relationship than I think we've had in the past. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, no, I do. I agree with that. And I think, the best companies also are, recognize that, they're not perfect in how they're supporting their employees necessarily too. And like they recognize that remote is a challenge and they're trying to do what they can to like help people adjust. So I think the next example on that list was Verizon. And, I think Verizon, like for all of the remote work opportunities that they have, they're like their their CHRO was talking about like how they're emphasizing what they consider mindful activities, right? Virtual workout classes for employees, right? Trying to change their virtual onboarding and training pieces, right? Trying to figure out like how they can engage with their remote workforce internally, right? If HubSpot's taking that and sharing that lens externally, Verizon's saying like, hey, internally, how can we do a better job of staying connected with our own employees, right? So they're I think they partnered with Accenture on their People and Work Connect, right? It's an employer-employee platform, really to try to connect, their internal employees. So, again, just goes back to what we said earlier, and it's communication. I think the quote that we saw is like from the CHRO is they said it's not pretty, everything's not working perfectly, but we put employee safety and health very high on our priority list, right? And like that's what employees want to hear. Yeah, no one is expecting, we're in a pandemic, like no one could have predicted this. It's that communication of recognizing that, hey, like we know that like your health and safety is important to us, right? We know that remote work is a challenge. We know that like, investing in, mindfulness is something that's important, right? We know that onboarding is different now. Like training is going to be tough. So like, hey, here's what we're doing to get better at it. And people recognize that, it's not going to be perfect, but I think Verizon has done a really good example of what they've done internally you know, to better connect, improve the connection for, you know, employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does remind me of, I don't know if it was in this article or another article, but this idea of pandemic fatigue that I just think that a lot of people, you know, again, when I wrote this original article, it was back in April, nobody really had any idea what the hell was going on or what was coming. And now we've all been living and breathing this for months now. And I think we have a very different angle to it. So, you know, what I think we can safely say is that if you're an organization and the messages that you're leading with about, you know, how you're providing, you know, face masks and hand sanitizer, you're probably missing the target here because, you know, those are things that everyone expects. And I think what you're seeing with an example like Verizon is getting beyond just the idea of basic safety and thinking more about wellness, which is, you know, something that's been important in a lot of organizations for a long time, but again, often tied to the actual in-office experience. So we've, you know, having fitness or yoga classes before work starts or on the lunch break, you know, different social gatherings throughout the day, other opportunities to, you know, cultivate mindfulness, like you were talking about. And I think some of the companies that are leading in this moment are the ones that have gotten past the hand sanitizer, past the mask, and are talking about how do we bring some of those employee wellness initiatives to now our remote workforce?
Yeah. Yep. I completely agree. And, you know, I'm brought back to a conversation with, you know, one of our friends that, he runs a recruiting team and, you know, we do our New Year's Eve, our New Year's resolution pieces. And like his big piece was, you know, promoting mindfulness of his teams. Right. And, you know, that was buying everyone, you know, memberships to Headspace and, you know, things like that, that ironically, as, you know, as we're having this conversation, I think back to like, boy, you know, Sam might've been a little bit more, you know, like, he's definitely a couple months ahead of the curve and, you know, maybe he had an idea of what was to come. Cause Certainly was important. So solid work, Sam. Well, I think it's a good pivot, right? So let's close with this piece. I would love to get your thoughts, Marty, right? So, all right. The world of employer branding, you know, reviews is different today than it was 9-12 months ago, you know, even 3 months ago. So just recently, Glassdoor's new review intelligence is launched. So I'm going to put a feather in our metaphorical cap and say, hey, this is great. This is great. And this is exactly what we've already been doing. So in Glassdoor announced their review intelligence, it basically gives you a better way to slice and dice your Glassdoor review data. You know, no one really knows the Glassdoor algorithm for how they score reviews. Although, you know, if you call us, we've got a pretty good idea how that works. You know, the review intelligence is the latest product from Glassdoor. And, you know, I think their first new product in maybe 3 years, where you can slice and dice data and actually see, okay, what is happening in our career development reviews over the last 6 months? Like, what is happening when it comes to, like, hey, like, how our, you know, CEO rating is has trended over the last, you know, 3 months? If we made changes on, you know, our benefits, like, is that recognized in our reviews in the next, you know, in the next 30 days? And, like, historically, that has been our biggest gripe when it comes to all these review sites. Like what happened 18 months ago is not relevant to what's happening today when it comes to your employer brand and company culture. So that's a long intro, and I'll just, you know, throw it over to you, Marty, and say, all right, what are your thoughts with you know, Glassdoor's new you know, review intelligence? You can't see me making my quotes. Review intelligence, TM.
Well, I think it's long overdue. As you said, I think everyone's been wondering for a while what Glassdoor is up to, especially after they've formalized or taken their relationship with Indeed kind of a step further this year. And I think the big question that's been on a lot of people's minds is like, okay, so what is Glassdoor's place in this world other than being a place where a lot of people write, you know, vent their frustrations about employers? So yeah, I think it's good. It does seem a little bit similar to our Glassdoor Insights dashboard. I don't know if that's just a coincidence, but either way, we applaud the opportunity to take a more granular look at your Glassdoor review data. Just to make some big points that I know we've made before, but you know, why this is important. You know, nobody knows, as you said, exactly how the algorithm works, but I think what we do know is that the average rating that you see on Glassdoor for employers is a reflection of reviews over quite a long period of time, you know, probably something like 18 months. And, you know, feel free to correct the record, Glassdoor, if we've got that wrong. But I think that seems pretty clear. And maybe there's some weighting that goes on in terms of giving a higher stature to the reviews that are collected more recently. But the long story short, regardless of what the algorithm does, it makes it very hard to actually move the needle on your average rating, even if you have collected a lot of positive or negative reviews recently. So if you have 1,000 reviews in the last 18 months and you execute some new employee initiative that everyone loves, and suddenly you have 50 new positive reviews, you're probably still not going to really see your Glassdoor rating, the average rating, go up very high. You know, you might see it go from 3.2 to 3.4, which is, you know, a nice, encouraging sort of directional sign that things are trending in the right direction. But it doesn't quite capture the fact that 50 people now wrote really glowing reviews of you in the last month or two. And so I think what you're going to see with this new offering from them, and what you see in our insights dashboard, is the opportunity to just see what's going on with your review data in discrete time periods. So not how is our average rating over the last 18 months change from September to October, but what if you just look at the reviews in September, you know, what was the average rating there? And if you just look at the reviews that were collected in October when we unveiled this new employee initiative, what were the reviews there? If you look at it that way, it's likely to tell a very different story. You know, so maybe before your average rating just in September was something like a 3, and maybe now it's like 4.2 or something, because again, you got 50 reviews in October that were all positive. I think that tells a very different story. I was just pulling numbers out of the air, but I think they're plausible numbers that you would see, where if you're looking again at that aggregate rating over time, you're not going to see some of the changes at the speed at which organizations are making decisions. I mean, you just unveiled this employee initiative. You want to know, is it being recognized? And if you relied on that aggregate rating, you wouldn't know it. But now with Talent Insights, these Glassdoor Insights, if you're able, or intelligence, or whatever they're calling it, I think there's good reason to think that you could see some of that needle moving in a much shorter time period.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the devil will be in the details, right? So one of the biggest challenges is, do you trust a company that controls all of your review data to present it in a way that is agnostic? I don't know. Who know? We've seen some, we'll call it abnormalities in the way that Glassdoor presents some of this data. You know, specifically, you were walking through how they present CEO approval ratings, for example. And, you know, I think most data folks would, you know, fall off their chair at the way some of this data is publicly shared. So I'm curious, as we kick the tires on talent intelligence or review intelligence, whatever they call it, is that still the case? Or is there a little bit more transparency into how they're breaking up that data? But who knows? I mean, look, like we give our Glassdoor dashboard away for all of our clients. I think free is usually, you know, the right price for that. But, you know, we also charge for those that aren't our agency clients. But I think that we'll see how public they are with how they're calculating some of this stuff, because that's the other piece too. Like, is it actionable? Is it clear? Or is it just another, you know, lever to pull because, you know, they need money?
Yeah, I know. What I hope to see from them, and this is something I've hoped for a long time, is a lot more transparency about how the reviews are being collected, and like you're saying, how some of the metrics are being calculated. Because, you know, I think we all have mixed feelings about Glassdoor. It's really great in some ways and not so great in others. And some of the not so great pieces are, you know, who are actually the people that are writing these reviews. We covered that at length. We don't have to go into down that rabbit hole here. But like, if you're really trying to get a clear understanding of what the health of your employer brand is, you know, it's a very important question. Perhaps the most important question is, who is being represented in the data set that you're looking at? And that's a big, big question mark. I think I still have, even after spending a lot of time with Glassdoor reviews, who are these people? How recently were they employed? What steps are you taking to verify their employment? And as a TA leader or as someone in HR looking at this information, what confidence can I have that this is representative of my whole workforce rather than just some people who kind of self-selected for good or bad reasons to write reviews on Glassdoor? You know, up until this point, the reason that people have cared so much about Glassdoor is because job candidates care a lot about Glassdoor. So it is a reputation management concern. You have to care what that number says. But in terms of really understanding what's going on with your brand, it's certainly an open question in my book. whether seeing a rating of like a 3.5, whether that tells you anything at all about what the totality of your workforce actually thinks of you as an employer.
Yeah. And I will say, you know, the broad point is always, well, job seekers care about Glassdoor. Well, like, how much now, right? I think that's, you know, the other piece too. You know, how much do they care about Glassdoor? Enough to make a decision whether or not to apply or join a company? I don't know anymore. You know, I think that's, you know, it's been increasingly more difficult to get to get an understanding of like whether or not people are going to Glassdoor and making decisions based off of those company ratings now. That's a whole nother episode or two, for sure. You know, but we track that, you know, we track that information when it comes to, hey, how much time is someone spending on a Glassdoor page and going on to complete an application? And, you know, hey, their job traffic has been very, very light, is what we'd say.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting, kind of ties back to the Talent Insights piece a little bit, because, you know, we have got several real world examples now of clients where, you know, based on some high level 20,000 foot view, maybe their employer brand isn't the strongest. Maybe they have an attrition problem. Maybe there's some negative perceptions. But even in those organizations, there is a significant cohort of people who are loving the experience. They've found their calling. They like what you're offering. They've discovered that you've got supportive leadership, to return to that example. And maybe 60% of your employees haven't figured that out or don't feel that way, but there's 40% of people who do. And I mean, I think this calls into question how you interpret as a job candidate some of this information you're seeing on review sites. Am I interested in hearing what every last person thinks of the employment experience at this company? Maybe as like a first step, but what I'm really interested in is like, what do people like me think of the employment experience? And I think there's a huge opportunity there for the future of review sites. I don't know who's going to do it. I mean, I've felt this way about review sites in general, and I think this is why people no longer take, you know, restaurant reviews and other things like that quite so seriously anymore. It's just like, the big question I always have is who's reviewing this Italian restaurant? You know, is this someone for whom, you know, Olive Garden is like a once in a lifetime experience and they just think it's amazing Italian food? Or is this somebody who, you know, lived in Italy for 2 years in college? You know, those opinions of what this Italian restaurant are like have very different contexts to them. And one of them I really care about and the other not so much. If you average them together, you might get some middle of the road rating for this Italian restaurant. And it doesn't really tell you all that much about whether you're actually going to like it. By the same token, I think you can see the direct, you know, comparison to the employer side. It's really a question of whether this is good for me, not whether it's good for everyone.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really good question. And, you know, as well, you and I talk about, like, we will build stuff and it will be in that space. So yeah, that's where we'll leave it. I think it's a good place to pause. We're, you know, almost an hour. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, for the duet. So next week we're back with a guest, and actually I think the next four weeks we have guests scheduled. So, you know, I think that's going to take us, geez, almost through 2021.
Close out the year strong.
Like, where to get started? You know, 2021 is 6 weeks away. Anyway, all right. Well, hey, I think that's a good place to wrap. For the rest of everyone, we'll catch you next week. And you know, always open invite if anyone has guests that they think would be helpful, has an interesting perspective. We, you know, the more the merrier. You know, we've got this going every week, and you know, it's always an insightful and fun conversation for us. So. Catch you guys next week.
See you, Graham.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. As always, head on over to changestate.io or shoot us a note on all the social media. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll check you guys next week.